lead is bad for you. Lead can make you really, really sick. In 2009, American regulators told factories that use lead that they needed to emit less of it into the air. Those American companies followed the rules, complied with the new standard, and U.S. lead emissions fell. But at the same time, something was happening across the border in Mexico. Lead poisoning and health outcomes in Mexico suddenly started to get worse. And this had something to do with those new U.S. regulations, as well as international trade. This episode examines the details that connect those two events. It explains how supply chains between the U.S. and Mexico create health linkages for people in the two countries that today's environmental regulators desperately need to worry about. To do all that, I will be joined by a very special guest.
Eric Verhoeven, Columbia University.
Eric Verhoeven is an economics professor at Columbia University. Eric is a trade economist, and he has studied trade and companies and people in developing countries all over the world, and especially in Mexico. And today, Eric is going to share some of his new research on trade, health, and lead. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Chad.
You are listening to an episode of Trade Talks, a podcast about the economics of trade and policy. I'm your host, Chad Bown, the Reginald Jones Senior Fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington. Let's start off with lead. What is lead and what is it used for?
Lead is actually a useful chemical. It's used in paint and makes the paint brighter and spread on more easily. It's used in gasoline. It sort of raises the octane rating of gasoline. It's used a lot in pipes. It makes the pipes more pliable and less, you know, corrosive. It's also used in batteries, especially in batteries for cars, in sort of lead acid batteries, which lead helps the battery generate a lot of power for not very much weight. Even though car batteries, they weigh some, but they're not as heavy as they would be if they were using some other kind of chemical mix in the battery.
Lead batteries are those heavy rectangular blocks critical for internal combustion engine vehicles. You open the car hood to change the oil or add windshield wiper fluid, and there's the battery. Making those batteries is going to be a big part of this story. Where do those lead batteries come from?
So the battery sector is almost a closed loop. Almost all car batteries are recycled. Almost all of that secondary lead, almost all of that lead that's produced by recycling batteries goes into new car batteries, goes into new lead acid batteries.
In the lead car battery recycling industry, the companies take the lead out of the old batteries and transform that lead to make it useful again in a new car battery. Another part of this story involves human health. Why is ingesting lead so bad for our health?
Lead has been shown to affect every organ in the human body. Essentially, it has especially toxic effects on the nervous system and on the development of brains. For that reason, it's especially bad for kids, for fetuses, and for young kids. It's been linked to IQ, sort of damages to IQ. It's been linked to learning disabilities. It's been linked to criminal behavior later in life. It's been linked to a bunch of different health outcomes. That link is quite well established. There's been lots and lots of research basically documenting the link between lead exposure and those negative outcomes. You may have heard, if you're paying attention to the news, that there's still lots of talk about lead. For instance, in the Flint water crisis, that was in large part about lead. There were other pollutants in the water. There were other, potential outbreaks of diseases that happened. But, lead from lead pipes was a big part of the problem there.
The EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, is the main pollution regulatory agency in the United States. When and how did the EPA really start regulating lead pollution?
The United States started regulating lead, lead pollution in earnest in the 1970s. Other countries started before the United States. Australia started in the 1930s in terms of regulating lead pollution, but the U.S. was a little slower on the uptake on that. Yeah, in 1971, there was an act that was passed to prevent poisoning from lead paint. The EPA started moving to restrict lead in gasoline. That process took a while. It phased in over a while. It was finally completed in 1991 with the Clean Air Act. In the U.S., there was an act that regulated the use of lead in toys. That was in 1974. There was the Safe Drinking Water Act, also in the early 70s. So in the United States, basically, since the late 70s, there hasn't been much lead use, although, you know, lead still exists in the paint in lots of old buildings, so lots of kids in the United States are still exposed to lead through paint that hasn't been lead paint that hasn't removed from these older buildings.
Your focus is going to be on lead in the air and the lead emissions coming out of factories like those car battery recycling plants. Tell us about how the EPA established standards for the permissible amount of lead in the air in the 1970s, how that evolved over time, and what firms emitting lead would need to do in response to changes in those regulations.
So in 1978, the EPA established a standard, happened to be 1.5 micrograms per cubic meter. That stayed in place for a number of years. Over time, the awareness of the dangers of lead increased. To the point that people realized the standard that had been set in 1978 wasn't sufficiently restrictive. And so starting at the end of 2007, with discussions continuing until the beginning of 2009, when there was an implementation of a new standard. And the standard was reduced by a factor of 10. So that was a big reduction. Firms had some time to adjust because the EPA announced in the end of 2007 that it was considering this, and then there was some debate. But then in 2009, basically, the new standard took effect, and firms were on notice and counties were on notice that they were out of compliance, that they would have to reduce emissions pretty sharply in a pretty short amount of time.
How did the lead battery recycling plants in the U.S. respond to the new regulation in 2009? What were their options?
So when the new regulation came into effect, 2009, battery recycling firms in the United States had to reduce emissions, and they had to do so pretty quickly. They had a couple options when that happened. They could either install new technology to purify the air to reduce emissions. The most popular new technology is something called a baghouse system. It's essentially a system of air filters. You pass any exhaust through these system of air filters. You also enclose the factory so you don't get a lot of fugitive dust. That's the most popular, technology for reducing emissions. The baghouse system is pretty expensive. There's one estimate in the literature that for 14 battery recycling firms that were in operation in 2009, it would have cost about $10 million for a year to install or to operate these baghouse systems. That's pretty expensive given that it's a relatively competitive industry. They're not hugely fat, profit margins in this industry. The other thing you can do is shut down the plant or just reduce the amount of batteries you're recycling.
Your research examines what happened after the U.S. imposed this new regulation in 2009. What do you find? And by that, I suppose the first question would be, did these lead battery recycling plants comply with the new EPA regulations by reducing their emissions? And if so, how did they comply?
So we have good news and bad news. The good news is we show that compliance did increase, that firms did comply. It looks like the enforcement worked in that sense in the United States. Most of the plants that were affected by the new regulation are actually battery recycling plants. And we show that within a few years, essentially nearly all of those plants were in complete compliance with the new standard. The Environmental Protection Agency has monitors that monitor lead near lead-emitting plants, including basically all battery recycling plants. And so there we show that the level of lead emissions in the air, the concentration of lead in the air near those plants dropped by about 40%. That's including some areas where they were already in compliance and some where they were more affected, what we call the regulation was binding on them, and so they reduced. So basically we found that by 2013, essentially everybody was, all the plants were in compliance.
So the good news is compliance, less lead in the air in the United States means better American health outcomes. But you also said there was bad news. What was the bad news?
The bad news is how they complied. You know, they could have complied by adopting new technologies that would reduce lead emissions. The most popular of those are baghouse systems that basically filter the air. But those are expensive. And so many firms, rather than doing that, they just reduced output. They just reduced the recycling batteries. In many cases, they shut down. So of about 15 battery recycling plants around the country that were in business, you know, in 2007, about five went out of business. There are about 10 that remained in business, you know, within a few years after the regulation. So the United States Geological Survey estimates that output they call it secondary lead, which is lead from recycling, dropped by about 13% over the period of our study, which is essentially a few years after 2007.
Normally, we might think that even some plants shutting down might not be all that bad. Maybe what happened is that the worst U.S. plants, the really dirty ones for whom it was too expensive to clean up, maybe it was those plants that went out of business. Perhaps the better U.S. plants cleaned themselves up. Those better lead recycling plants adopted the new technology, these baghouse filter systems. It might have been expensive, but they took on the costs and stopped polluting. The point is, when a new policy comes along, like an EPA regulation, the fact that not all companies respond the same way is quite natural in economic markets. Economic researchers see that response in the data all the time. But that wasn't just it. The really bad news is what came next.
For the most part, people need batteries for their cars. There's a certain amount of cars on the road. Every once in a while, the battery needs to be replaced. And so consumption of batteries hasn't been much affected by the new regulation. The thing that happened is that the used lead-acid batteries started getting exported to Mexico. There were already some exports to Mexico, but the exports to Mexico of used lead-acid batteries went up by a factor of four over a very short period of time, from 2007 to 2014.
Again, though, we don't normally think of booming U.S. exports as a problem. Why was this sudden increase in U.S. exports of used lead batteries such a concern? Didn't Mexico also have regulations for lead emissions at its battery recycling plants?
Mexico had an airborne lead standard, which was at the same level that the United States established in 1978. Mexico's lead standard was 1.5 micrograms per cubic meter, which was the same at the United States as the United States. Mexico did not change its standard. Its standard remained at the same level. So what happened is that the battery recycling that picked up in Mexico as a result of this environmental regulation in the United States was pretty dirty. We don't have direct evidence of that because we don't have the air monitors in Mexico. In fact, Mexico, outside of Mexico City, wasn't even monitoring airborne lead.
Following the new U.S. regulation, some American plants shut down, and the United States started exporting massive amounts of used lead batteries to Mexico to be recycled there instead. But here's the problem. Mexico did have regulations for airborne lead emissions, but Mexico's regulations were only at that old 1978 standard. The new worry was that the flood of imports from the United States would increase the amount of lead in Mexico's air. Because Mexico doesn't have lead emissions data, what other indirect techniques did you use to look at whether the situation in Mexico was getting worse?
So we see output in the Mexican battery plants increase significantly, much more than other detailed industries in the primary metal sector. So in the Mexican industrial census data, which you can observe every 5 years, 2008, 2013, we can see battery recycling plants. And so it's confidential, but we, you know, working with the Mexican Statistical Agency, we're able to establish that the output, in terms of lead output, of those battery recycling plants shot up relative to other sectors, detailed sectors in the same broad industry category. So relative to the production of other primary metals, the production of secondary lead through battery recycling is just a huge outlier.
Mexico was producing a lot more lead battery output because it was now receiving a flood of used battery inputs from the new imports arriving from the United States. What did Mexican regulators know at this time about the emissions at the battery plants in Mexico.
In Mexico, they did not have good monitoring of airborne lead. Outside of Mexico City, there was not a system of air monitors tracking how much lead there was. In all likelihood, many of the battery recycling plants in Mexico were not in conformity with the existing standard, which was the same standard that the U.S. established in 1978. So they're dirty already. And essentially what's happening is now with all these exports of used batteries from the United States into Mexico, they're just being processed. So those existing battery recycling plants are just ramping up their operations in the dirty way that they'd already been in recycling batteries before. Again, there's a mix. There's going to be some plants in Mexico that are a little bit cleaner and some that are a little bit dirtier. But for the most part, there's not a lot of enforcement in Mexico. And so, you know, when you're expanding production in Mexico, which we show is what happened, that's likely to increase, you know, lead emissions in Mexico.
Is there evidence out there from other sources about lead emissions being a problem in Mexico?
Since our paper came out, there's been an interesting study where an NGO called Occupational Knowledge International has gone and taken soil samples from nearby some battery recycling plants, and they find that they're many times the acceptable standard, even the Mexican standard. So after the fact, they've corroborated our findings and actually, you know, corroborated earlier findings by the same NGO saying that this is an issue, that there's lead is being emitted.
One concern is that lead emissions in Mexico were going up. But the really big worry is that this pollution was hurting human health. How do you examine the health impact of this increase in lead pollution? What health outcome in Mexico do you look at?
The health outcome we're going to focus on is birth weight. Birth weight, it's very well measured. It responds quickly to environmental shocks. In that sense, we're going to be able to pick it up quickly. Extensive research has shown that lead exposure, especially airborne lead exposure, affects fetal health, and so it's likely to affect birth weight. The data are very good. We can see births in birth certificate data in Mexico, which is public, which we have access to, and in the hospital discharge records from hospitals in Mexico run by the Ministry of Health. We compare birth outcomes, birth weight outcomes, for mothers who live within 2 miles of a battery recycling plant, and we compare them to mothers who live between 2 and 4 miles, so just a little bit farther away. We can do that even within a given hospital. So we can compare in a given hospital, we can compare moms who live near the plant versus to moms that who don't.
What do you find?
We find, so the average incidence of low birth weight, by which I mean below 2.5 kilograms, the average incidence of low birth weight is about 9.5%. And living near a battery plant is associated with a 2% increase. So from 9.5% to 11.5% increase in the incidence of low birth weight. That's very big, already very big, and that's for averaging all types of hospitals. When we look by hospital type, so when we look at, we compare the births in Ministry of Health hospitals, which tend to serve the poorest segment of the population in Mexico, to hospitals in the social security system, which tend to serve kind of middle-income people, to private hospitals, which tend to serve the rich, we only find an effect in the Ministry of Health hospitals. In the Ministry of Health hospitals, we find a much bigger effect. So we find on a base of about 12%, 12.8% incidence of low birth weight, that increases by 4.8%. So it goes from about 13% to about 18% incidence of low birth weight. Just concentrating in those hospitals. And basically, we don't find any effect in the Social Security hospitals or in the private hospitals, which tend to serve more advantaged segments of the population. So this effect that we find that's concentrated in the hospital serving the poorest mothers, that's much larger in those hospitals, that's consistent with research in lots of other places, including the United States. It's quite common to find that, you know, the burden of environmental hazards is disproportionately borne by the poor. There's a whole literature on environmental justice, which is essentially making that point, that the environmental hazards, it's really the poor that suffer. We're finding that our results are very consistent with that view.
Tell us more about why the result that lead pollution in Mexico is more likely to impact the poor is so worrisome.
One reason why this disparate effect we're finding, that the poor are more affected than middle class or the rich in Mexico, is important is because You know, when the Mexican government starts negotiating over what the environment regulations should be, it's not necessarily the interests of the poor that are being represented, right? So it's possible that in the same way that in the United States, environmental hazards are often borne by the poor and other segments of the population don't necessarily take that into account or not as much as maybe they should, the same thing might happen in Mexico in the sense that the poorest people who are the moms who are giving birth in these Ministry of Health hospitals, they're not don't necessarily have a lot of political power. They don't have a lot of political leverage. They're not necessarily at the bargaining table deciding, you know, how much battery recycling do we want to have in our community.
The U.S. regulations changed in 2009. Used battery exports to Mexico increased right away. Recycled battery production in Mexico increased right away. And health outcomes in Mexico. So lots more low birth weight babies right next to those battery plants deteriorated right away. How eventually did the Mexican government respond?
Eventually, there was attention to this in Mexico. There were press reports, NGOs had reports about the level of lead pollution and lead poisoning in Mexico. And so it took a few years, but eventually Mexico did tighten regulations also. So by 2015, Mexico had passed new regulations called point of production regulations. It's not, you know, regulation of airborne lead. It's airborne lead just from a monitor in the area. They actually go to the battery recycling plants and they'll, you know, test how much lead is being emitted. We do find, just that's towards the end of our period, that's a little bit of a reduction in lead emissions in 2015, and that's consistent with that, you know, Mexican policy having an effect. Our study stopped in 2015. We haven't been monitoring closely in the data what's been happening, but all indications are this is still a problem in Mexico. There's been a recent report in February 2023 by Occupational Knowledge International. It's an NGO that's really following this issue closely, and they find very elevated levels of lead in the soil around battery recycling plants. It's expensive to maintain a whole set of monitors for airborne lead. Mexico is slowly expanding its monitors, but it really doesn't have the same capacity, the same ability to monitor lead in the way the Environmental Protection Agency does in the United States. And so Mexico still has a long way to go.
These results you find are amazing, but they're also stunning because they are very different from what researchers have typically found when looking for evidence of this phenomenon, what is referred to as the pollution haven hypothesis. The theory has always been that when countries open up to trade, the ability to trade creates new incentives for dirty, polluting industries to leave countries with high environmental standards and tough regulators like the EPA, maybe through foreign direct investment or FDI, and move to another country with weaker environmental regulations. How did the earlier literature tend to investigate this pollution haven hypothesis?
So the literature has generally focused on one country at a time, like using U.S. data, looking at whether environmental regulation leads to, say, more outgoing FDI or, say, more imports of the good that might be produced under dirty conditions. There have been relatively few studies that have looked, that have tied north to south directly. Right, and they say not just, you know, are you seeing more outgoing FDI, but are you seeing more outgoing FDI to poor countries with weaker regulations? There have been relatively few of those, and the studies that have focused on that have typically not found much of, you know, that the displaced production is going especially to poor countries, right? So there has been findings that there's more outgoing FDI, there's more imports of those products, but not specifically to developing countries that with weaker regulations. So it's often interpreted that, you know, there's not really a pollution haven effect. There's some displacement effect of regulation, but not necessarily toward, you know, developing countries. I think a contribution of our paper is to show actually in this industry that we can document very well, partly for data reasons, the data environment is rich. We can track these used lead-acid batteries going across the border. And, you know, but we can document well that there really is a pollution haven effect in the battery recycling industry. And that seems important because in the policy world, there's this general sense that this is not a big issue. The World Bank put out the World Development Report in 2020 where it said, this is nothing to worry about. This is not a big deal. There's not really pollution haven effects. We're showing, at least in this industry that we understand well, where we can measure things well, it is a big deal.
If I asked for your advice, where do you think researchers should look next?
We'd love to see a bunch of other studies trying to look similarly you know, at displacement effects from north to south, where you can actually track what's happening in the industry in the United States, then or some other rich country, and then follow the inputs as they're transferring across borders, and then look at what's happening in the developing country where it's going. I suspect we're going to find pollution haven effects in a bunch of sectors as well. That's a hypothesis. That's a conjecture. It's not proof yet. I would like to see more research doing that, and you know, but I suspect that we're going to find that this is not an isolated phenomenon.
Having now studied the industry, does battery recycling have special characteristics that might help researchers identify where else to look for these sort of pollution haven effects?
It's possible that battery recycling is kind of special in the sense that it's a pretty dirty industry. It has, you know, relatively high abatement costs. Adopting these baghouse systems costs a lot of money in order to reduce lead emissions. And at the same time, it's pretty mobile in the sense that you know, the inputs are easily shipped. The used lead-acid batteries, it's not hard to ship them. The lead itself, once it's been extracted from the lead-acid batteries, is not that hard to ship. The new batteries, once they're produced, are not that hard to ship. And so it's the industry is pretty mobile in that sense. And that may be, it's possible that that's why we're finding these pollution haven effects in this industry, where other people looking at a more macro and aggregate level have not really found them. That's something that needs to be investigated more, you know, at the micro level, and looking at these patterns of, you know, abatement costs and tradability of the inputs and outputs in order to, you know, in order to figure out whether there's a systematic pattern there.
And I want to go back to policy. Back in 2007, 8, 9, when the U.S. was tightening its own regulations, should it have known that all this might happen? Could policymakers have predicted that making air quality better in the United States was going to lead to a surge in used battery exports to Mexico in particular?
So there's a convention from 1992 signed in Basel for the shipment of hazardous waste. The United States is not a signatory to that convention. Countries that are signatories, which is almost all countries in the world, are not supposed to accept hazardous waste from the United States unless they have a bilateral trade agreement. In 2007, you know, if you'd asked yourself the question, all these used lead-acid batteries, where are they going to go? Based on the fact the United States is not a signatory to the 1992 Basel Convention, but they have a bilateral trade agreement to Mexico, you could have predicted probably a lot of these were going to go to Mexico. But to be fair, you know, the conventional wisdom was these pollution haven effects are not a thing, are not really happening. You know, that's what the state of the literature was. And so I'm not sure there are a lot of people in 2007 thinking, oh, this is going to be bad for Mexico. Even in Mexico, people didn't realize that this was about to happen.
As my last question, I want to ask about the main policy lessons from this episode. The U.S. and Mexican economies are incredibly connected through their free trade agreement and the emergence of cross-border supply chains in a lot of sectors, including for lead batteries. What do those economic interconnections mean for regulatory cooperation, including for environmental policy, between these two countries?
I think an important thing we're learning in this case is that trade policy and environmental policy are linked and need to be talked about in the same conversation. There's a tendency sometimes among trade people, the United States or other rich countries, to say, that's a separate issue. Environmental, that's a separate conversation. Let's do the trade deal, and then we'll worry about the environmental stuff later. And I think what we're learning here is that that's untenable, that separation. We have to think about both, right? That we're linked. Our fates are linked. The United States and Mexico, our fates are linked. Our environmental fates are linked in the same way that our trade fates are linked. And we need to think about these things together. And so we really need a regime that where we can think about common trade regulation and common environmental regulation. Think about those two things in the same agreement. Ideally, what would have happened was somehow the battery recyclers got a stronger encouragement to clean up their act rather than just move. And now, it's not necessarily one battery recycler, but we would like to see the industry adopt some of these baghouse systems or some of these other technologies that can reduce lead emissions in place rather than just moving to Mexico. Now, it's an important point. Mexico, you know, should be free to or at least have the ability to set environmental regulations that it thinks are optimal for Mexico, subject to negotiation with the United States. The level of environmental regulation that Mexico sets may be lower, maybe less strict than what the U.S. sets, partly because of income differences. They really want to grow. They want to grow quickly, right? And so Mexico should have the ability to set a different level of environmental regulation. But that the optimal level of environmental regulation, even for Mexico, is not going to be zero, right? And it's not just going to be take whatever comes. I think the fact that we saw Mexico adopting regulations in 2015, it took a few years, but we saw them adopting, suggests that people realize that this, especially battery recycling and lead emissions are extremely toxic. Lots of Mexican babies and kids are suffering, and so they really need something to be done about it. So I think what should have happened is a fuller, more robust conversation between the U.S. and Mexico at the time about what's the right level of environmental regulation of lead in both places.
Eric, thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Jed. It's a pleasure.
And that is all for Trade Talks. A huge thanks to Eric Verhoeven at Columbia University. Do check out Eric's new paper with Shinsuke Tanaka and Kensuke Tashima titled North-South Displacement Effects of Environmental Regulation, The Case of Battery Recycling. It has just been published in American Economic Review Insights. I will post a link to the article on the episode page of the Trade Talks website. Thanks to Melina Cobb, our supervising producer. Thanks to Nia Kitchen on digital. And as always, thanks to Colin Warren, our audio guy. Do follow us on Twitter or Mastodon. We're on @trade_talks. That's not one, but two underscores, @trade_talks. Because when it comes to the number of countries coordinating their tighter standards for airborne lead emissions coming out of their battery recycling plants, two is better than one.